Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening, wherever you are around the state or in Broken Hill, or you might be listening anywhere around the nation or even the world. Lovely to be with you on this last Saturday of 2018. John, another year of Talkback Gardening gone by. I hesitate to ask how many that would be for you.
I'm not going to tell you either.
No, but we are looking back at the year in review for home gardeners, aren't we, John?
2018, as a garden point of view, how will you remember it? It was certainly warmer and drier from a weather point of view. And very shortly, we'll be talking to Brett Draper, who manages one of our garden centres, about some of the plants and the products that got people excited during the year, and what were some of the insect pests and the diseases that caused concern, and what lessons we can draw out of that. And then, of course, we're also looking very much for feedback from our listeners as to how they've got through the hot weather.
That is right. Look, we're asking you by SMS, if you have opportunity to access that, to let us know what got you through, particularly the heat wave that we've had in the last few days, which plants survived, which plants didn't, and what the tips and tricks are that helped you get your plants through. And John, we've got so many, I just might mention a few straight away. Melissa says, my garden survived well. It's an established garden with micro-irrigation. Some plants wilted during the day but perked up at night. My lawn got fried. I used hose flooding instead of sprinkler to reduce evaporation, which seemed to help a bit. The Marias were top performers.
Ah, that's interesting. Mm, yes.
Thanks, Melissa. Great feedback. Susan says, we have above ground veggie patches with weepy hose irrigation. A small area of tomatoes has shade cloth. I watered each evening during the heat wave and all plants survived beautifully. My pickling cucumbers are going bunter, as well as the climbing, as well as the climbing beans, and the preserving pan is a constant in my kitchen. Well done, Susan. I watered the pot plants each day too. They're all doing well, even the hydrangeas.
Oh, that sounds like a good garden.
Water, the elixir of life, isn't it?
That's right, but I also noticed that little phrase, shade cloth.
Yes, and you might hear that again in just a moment, but Kay of Loxton says, there's a nice photograph here, this Ixora, forgive me if I've got that wrong, of Orange. Yes. Photo was taken on the 26th of December. It faces north and has been in a pot since 1988. It flowers like this every time of year, and let's just say profusely. It gets watered every night during the hot weather. Heat doesn't bother it. The rest of our garden looks good as we keep the water up to it with drippers and plenty of mulch. Thank you, Kay. And I'll do one more before we introduce our guest. Another Susan says, tomatoes, lettuce, cucumbers in wicking beds. Just lost that again. Let's have a look. Plus, here we go. 50% shade. Coped well with heat. In the Adelaide Hills, strawberries in wine barrel wicking beds didn't wilt at all, not under shade, but don't get full afternoon sun.
Ah, so now that again is very, very valuable information. Interest in wicking beds is growing quite rapidly and people are saying, is it worth the effort? And it seems like it's going to work when you've got hot, hot weather, providing, of course, the plants are shaded.
Yeah, so that shade coming in is a very important aspect. So if it's not actual shade cloth in a shaded position, it's very important, isn't it?
Yes, and it doesn't have to be shade cloth. It's just that it's very, very, very convenient. And we might try and work shade cloth into the discussion with Brett.
Call now 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. And don't forget to send us through your tips on how your plants survived the heat wave conditions, what ones came out of it the best, by SMS on 0467 922 891. And Val rang to say she saved her plants in the heat by throwing old laced curtains on her plants. Cheap fix. Well done, Val. I think it's time to introduce someone that's well known to our Talkback Gardening listeners, John.
Brett Draper manages one of our major garden centres amongst many of his other hats that he wears. And it's the role as a garden centre manager that I'd like to talk to Brett about this morning and the year 2018. Good morning to you, Brett.
Good morning, John, and good morning, Deb.
So, after a week of extremely hot weather, how do you reckon your customers have survived the heat?
Well, I think quite well, John. A lot of customers have heeded the warnings out there with the heat coming, and have either purchased their shave cloth ahead of time and got that up ahead of time, and looked at various products that you can use, like your drought shield type products, for instance, that you can put on plants before the heat to protect them. But of course, that has meant that there's been a run on those type of things, and things like shade cloth and stocks are starting to run a little bit low.
That's an interesting one, yes. So people are taking the heed and actually using the. I presume that they're going for the 50% white shade cloth, or are they changing colours?
Well, sometimes people do it for aesthetics, sometimes for colour, but ideally the 50% shade cloth for shading most plants is ideal. But when that runs out, of course, there's not much choice and they might need to go for a different colour. But the beauty with the 50% shade cloth is it still allows enough natural light through for the plants to do well through there, and also a little bit of air movement, which is often quite important for a lot of plants.
Brett, you mentioned a product, Drought Shield. Mm. Tell me, what is Drought Shield, for those that are not aware of it, and why are people using it, and in your opinion, how effective is it?
Okay, John, it's a product, it's a transparent, so it helps to reduce the moisture loss through the foliage of the plant, and it's best applied before the heat, and it can last for up to 90 days, but it does depend on how vigorous the plant is growing. So the more vigorous the plant is growing, the less effective it will be over time, because it forms a coating over the leaf which will stretch, if you like. So if it's growing very rapidly, you'll lose that protection. But it is very effective at protecting plants, particularly ones that have been newly planted or newly transplanted, or lovely plants that, for whatever reason, you may not be able to shade or protect as much as you would like.
So that could be a lifesaver, because a comment which I was going to try and work in, it's my observation that it's the plants that have only been recently planted and haven't had time to re-establish a root system that have come through probably the worst as a result of the hot weather. And you're suggesting that Drought Shield will give you protection, or give those kind of plants some protection.
Most definitely, John, most definitely. And look, it can also be, you know, people that have much loved plants that can, if they get damaged by the sun, take a long time to recover as well, that people would like to protect. And things like, you know, some of your magnolias or camellias, for instance, that can, you know, be very badly affected in extreme heat. And obviously they can take a long time to recover. It works exceptionally well on those type of plants.
You give me very good feedback during the year, and during January and February, you kept on saying, John, mites. How are the customers dealing with mites, particularly if we're going back to that hot weather we had last January and February?
Yes. The mite numbers and the mite population certainly built up, and they affected a wide range of plants, and a lot of hedging type plants were affected, and obviously they can make them look quite unsightly with that brown mottling look on the leaves. You know, there are some fantastic products to help control them. So your potassium-based soaps are really very effective at controlling the mites. And people are getting on top of that and just looking for the signs when it first occurs, because if you can get on top of it before the populations build up too much, it goes a long way to protecting those plants.
Just talking chemicals, during autumn, one of the major garden retailers decided it withdrew Confidor, the imidacloprid product, as an insecticide, and also there was a lot of concern about the use of glyphosate. How are you reading what's going on in terms of people's attitudes to the use of garden chemicals?
Well, it's certainly making people think a little bit more before they use a particular product, finding out a little bit more about it and some of the not side effects, but other effects that they might have on the environment, for instance. So if anything, it's making people use them more responsibly, which is good from every perspective. But what it has also done has meant that there are now a whole range of products which are either organic or very low toxic that are coming onto the market that people can use as an alternative.
So, say the Confidors, which, can I ask, have your sales of Confidor dropped?
Yes, they have, John, they have. So people have heeded, you know, or looked at the information that's there and have only used them maybe not as more of a broad spectrum type of spray, but only for very specific things, because they are only, you know, that they are good at targeting very specific insects, rather than, you know, people necessarily buying it and spraying it all over the garden, and then the possible, you know, other effects it might have on other beneficial insects around.
So its benefit has been on sap-sucking insects. What kind of chemicals are being used effectively as a result?
Well, yeah, again, on your sap-sucking insects, people have been using horticultural oils, for instance, and just targeting, like if it's aphids, for instance, and they're on roses or on the buds of roses, people are just targeting where they're at their worst, and only when they're in big numbers. Because also remembering, we have had a good season where we've had lots and lots of beneficial insects around, which have helped keep the numbers of those baddies, if you like, under control. And just by targeting just, you know, the clumps of insects when they're really, really bad has just given those goodies a leg up, if that makes sense, without
yes.
wiping out the whole population.
No, and I think last year's, the January, February, very extreme hot weather actually knocked off a lot of the pest insects, particularly scales and some of those kind of insects.
That
allowed probably the predators to come up. But I'm getting sidetracked. I want to come into winter, because winter, the major issue that got a lot of gardeners very excited, of course, was citrus gall wasp. What do you think, why the concern this winter?
I think, John, that we've had it around now for a few years, and it's people have really started to become aware of what the citrus gall wasp does to their citrus trees in terms of the distorting of the branches that are on there. But more importantly, the education that you've done in particular on the program, John, is to tell people or show people what to look out for and when to actually control them. Because at the moment, as we know, there is really not a one spray fix, if you like, that can control them. So people need to be vigilant and understand the life cycle of the gall wasp and know what to do and when. And I think people have been very observant at looking at their trees and then acting and heeding the advice and acting when they needed to.
The advice, of course, has been to chop off the galls during winter or before spring, early spring, to get rid of the galls. But if you've got a dwarf tree, you can end up with very little tree left. In came a relatively new product, and I think you had a fair hand in assisting me in getting that onto the market, horticultural glues. What reaction have you had to the use of horticultural glues as a means of preventing a citrus gall wasp?
Oh, a huge reaction, John. It's been something that people have wanted to get hold of, something to be able to play their part, if you like, in controlling the populations that are out there. And the application of those horticultural glues or tree guards that you can apply to those galls to trap, if you like, as the wasp emerges from that gall has been invaluable, and we've had lots and lots of feedback from people that have said how successful that has been and how much it's actually saved their tree. As you say, particularly if it's a dwarf tree and there's not much actual framework of the tree to work from, it's the difference between them actually having a tree and not having a tree now.
Brett Draper, our wonderful plant specialist, talking about the year in review with you, John, looking back at 2018 and how it's been for home gardeners. Thank you very much for your texts. We're still asking you for some tips and some advice and some feedback on how your garden made it through the recent heatwave that we've had. Text line 0467 922891 for John and Brett's interest. Brian says, I heavily mulched all vegetable plus lots, that is lots of 50% white shade cloth, watered daily at night and everything okay. Only problem, tomatoes have stopped ripening. So I might have just put a bit of a stall on that.
It's the hot weather that's preventing them from ripening as rapidly as they should.
And someone says, shade cloth over veggies, follow John's idea of a good deep water with short top-ups to keep roots cool, pot survived well and moved them out of the direct sun. So excellent there. And George in Burris says, I have a large garden with established shade trees, not much fruit, veggies due to possums, but evening soakings of lawns by sprinkler and drippers under mulch for all else. So it looks like people have been doing all the things that you should be doing.
Yes, and it's nice to get positive reactions rather than saying, oh, look, my garden got burnt, I'm walking away, I'm giving up. People, I think, have learnt that. They're learning very, very well how to deal with the climate change and the hot, hot weather.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
On this last Saturday in 2018, we're taking a look back at the year for home gardeners with our Talk Back Gardener John Lamb and special guest Brett Draper.
Brett, let's now take a look at some of the plants that may have got gardeners excited. Again, let's go back to last summer when it was hot, but for a lot of people, once the cooler weather came in February, they took full advantage of the cooler weather and also the Indian summer. So what were they excited about?
Well, particularly last summer, John, the crepe myrtles did exceptionally well, and there's a range of Indian summer crepe myrtles which are probably aptly named for the season we had last year, and they flowered and flowered and flowered and just looked spectacular. And as a result, actually, too, you'll see them just starting to flower this summer. So they'll pop up around in your gardens and in street trees. They'll be looking spectacular very shortly.
The Indian summer one has been around for a while, but during the year, there was a tremendous amount of interest in a newer coloured leaf crepe myrtle. Could you just tell us what that was and how that one's going?
Yes, look, there's a range of darker leafed, almost a burgundy leaf colour crepe myrtles, the Diamonds and the Dark series. They grow reasonably well, and they are a bit shorter and flower reasonably well, but some of them are very susceptible to powdery mildew, so you need to be very careful and very observant about what's going on, because they can really affect the growth. And in particular, I've observed a light coloured one which has got, you know, pale white flower, goes to pale pink, is very, very susceptible to powdery mildew, and it really does get badly affected.
Yes, powdery mildew has certainly been a problem many years ago on the crepe myrtles, and I guess that was the advantage of the Indian summer range, is they've got tremendous resistance.
Yes, definitely. There are some red and some darker pink flowering varieties in this series which don't really seem to be affected. It's just this lighter coloured one that gets quite badly affected.
All right.
From my observation.
Colour plants for courtyards.
Colours, well, I mean, your Calibra colours have just been going, you know, from strength to strength. They have really played with their breath.
And that's because of the hot weather, do you think?
I think so as well, because they do tolerate the heat exceptionally well, and you know, with they sort of lend themselves very well to either pot culture or into raised beds, and I think that, you know, with a lot of courtyards, that's very, very well suited.
Finding plants that'll tolerate the sun is difficult, and one of the few that may be standout could be the mandevillias.
Yes, mandevillias are absolutely spectacular, John. And as a there's a couple of different varieties available now too. There are some shrub varieties which grow quite nicely in a large tub or a large container, growing sort of 30 to 40 centimetres and masses of flowers. And then there's the ones that get runners on them, so they're a climber and they climb up a small trellis or a tripod frame with masses of flower and extremely colourful, and they really do love the heat as well.
Yes, they certainly do. Let's move into winter and spring. because time's going to beat us, I think, Brett. Let's take a look at which were the wow plants, the colour plants that got gardeners excited, and people maybe like to make a note of them now so that come autumn and winter, they're ready to go.
Yes, well, look, obviously late winter going into spring is when you see most of your plant varieties looking at their best in terms of flowering. And we've seen a whole range or a whole series of plants which are available for people to pop in, which are great for attracting, pollinators of all persuasions to your garden. So things like your Bidens, and there's varieties like Bees Alive and Rockstar, for instance, which are quite lovely. A whole series of salvias and lots of different salvias, which are just spectacular right through spring and into early summer. And once the real heat comes, they sort of give it a bit of a rest, and you give them a haircut and they come back again in autumn. So you get, a terrific flush of flowering again in autumn. And of course, look, we mentioned the Calabacoas earlier, but they really are a plant that does exceptionally well in a warm climate over summer, and just look very spectacular.
So there's lots of colour, lots of plants that got people excited, and it was a very, very interesting season. Do you think gardeners are aware of how the climate is changing, and how well do you think they're adapting to that change?
John, I think they're fully aware of the change, and they are adapting quite well. I mean, it's one of those things where you need to monitor the situation, and when with our forecasting now, when we can see that there are going to be 3 or 4 days above that 35 degrees, people are very aware and get their shade up in preparation before that actually hits to protect their plants. That's really important. So they're adapting exceptionally well, but also looking at permanent structures that they can put up during that period over the northern and the western side of the plant to protect them. I think people now have really got the infrastructure, if you like, in place to allow them, particularly in their vegetable beds, for instance, to continue to grow them, or to grow the vegetables and have a crop all throughout the year. And that has obviously been something that they've wanted to do, because they would like to be able to grow their own. And there is a massive movement of growing your own vegetables at this time.
Brett Draper, wonderful information. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences as a garden manager. There's an opportunity to continue the discussion as to why garden centres perhaps don't promote shade cloth as much as perhaps they could or should, but that's a story for another day. Brett Draper, talk to you next time.
Good on you. Thank you, John. Have a happy new year, and the same to you, Deb.
Thank you, Brett, and happy new year to you, and thank you for your incredible input into our Talkback Gardening program this year, and also congratulations on another very successful Royal Adelaide show.
Oh, thank you, Deb. It seems like so long ago now.
Don't worry, it'll come around again before you know it.
Yes, certainly will.
Thank you, Brett. Brett Draper, wonderful contributor to our program. It's 9:30. I'm just going to warn you again, in about 5 minutes' time, we are heading off to the cricket for day four of the third test, Australia against India at the MCG. So if you'd like to stay listening to us, we've got lots of calls, Iris, Margaret, Eve, Tony, Colin and Lance among them. Then please make sure that you've got your digital radio on, or you can listen to us online or via the ABC Listen app.
Get the latest news whenever you want, wherever you are, with the ABC News app. Top stories from Australia and around the world. Choose your news with personalised topics you care about. Get the latest breaking news with live notifications, as well as the weather and feature articles. Download the ABC News app, Australia's most trusted news source. Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe.
Call 1300 222
221
891.
It's the year in review 2018 for home gardeners, and particularly the last week we've been asking you how you have got your plants through the hot weather that we've had in the heat wave. Lots of different views coming through, but just a few more for you, John. Pam at Vale Park says, our bougainvilleas have never looked better. Coconut ice flowering for the first time ever and looks stunning. Angela says, I have good shade, but still do normal watering, but great mulching, I find, is essential. All of our plants and veggies are looking fabulous. So mulching, big part of it is also.
Absolutely, yes, and we've been overlooking the value of mulch, but can't cover everything.
No, that's true.
But good comment. That's nice feedback.
That's right. And Helen at Williston says, my poor walnut tree, even though it gets moved into shaded spots, the older leaves dry off on hot days, but the new tips appear undamaged. So it's very hard, I guess, when you've got that sort of exposed area. And Alan at Trinity Gardens has some very good feedback for you, John. Let me just find it again if I can. It says, John, your advice on controlling the gall wasp has been absolutely sensational and spot on. It really helped me control my pest at home this year.
Thank you very much. It's nice to know, but that's just a matter of gathering the information that's already out there.
But it's nice. It's nice to do that as well. And we've just had some information back that apricots have suffered a bit from the stone heating up and causing the fruit to brown around the stone. That might be one of the more common results of an extended period of heat.
I'm sure that that's going to be a problem, a question that will come in over the next few weeks. The stone just gets so hot, it just radiates the heat, cooks the apricot from the inside out.
Yeah, well, that's right. But Ian and Victor says, what's wrong with you people? Summers have always been warm to hot. It's Australia. Well, that's true, but they are getting hotter, aren't they, John? We'll hear from Darren Ray about that.
Well, we'll leave that
Saturday
to Darren Ray. He's in a much better position than I am in terms of explaining just how hot it is and how quickly it is changing.
That's right. And Kim, who rang from Mitchell Park, is part of a co-op. And on this issue that you raised, John, which I think we're going to see a big rise in the future, they've used wicking beds fed with water from the bottom, and that process has saved all of their plants, veggies and herbs, and they do also use shade cloth as well. So it's not even just one thing or another thing. It's often the combination of things, isn't it?
That's the value of the feedback, because I'm writing as they're coming in and I'm making little notes so that next year, you can bet your boots, we'll be looking at wicking beds as an issue because of the interest in it, and continuing the discussions on the shade and the insects that are causing the problems. What are the solutions?
Exactly. And just another one, Mark at Keith says, early morning water plus top-ups during the day. Tomatoes have been picked today. No ill effects from the hot weather. Does get afternoon shade from a Melaleuca.
Well, there we are. It's just lovely hearing those success stories, though.
Fantastic. We'll keep them coming. Our SMS line 0467 922 891. Time now to speak to Iris G. You've been hanging on for a while. Iris, thank you for your patience.
I had, but I always listen to the garden show, so it's just listening to the garden show.
And
so,
you know what? It makes you sit down for a half an hour, doesn't it?
I usually work that out.
Goodness. Tell me, how are you surviving the hot, hot weather?
Fine. My garden seems to... it's a very established garden.
Yes.
It just seems to get through. There's a bit of watering, but I watered well before the heat, and I haven't really watered since it's been hot, and things are looking fine.
Oh, that sounds very, very good. And I suspect you've also been very, very smart in terms of what you're growing. The things which will tolerate the heat and the dryness probably are the things that are dominating your garden.
Well, I'm only just getting back into veggie garden. I used to be a big veggie garden, so
yes.
I don't really have anything that's delicate at the moment. So,
well, the nice thing is you're gardening and enjoying it. So what's the problem?
Well, the problem is it's got to be fixed very quickly. I'm looking after a neighbour's indoor plants, and she's got a large bush that doesn't flower, and I don't know what it is. It's about a metre high, and she's had it forever, I know. And it seems like it's got white fly on it, and there's no one else going into the house except me, so I don't know where the bugs came from, but they weren't there when she went, and they're there now.
So do they fly away when you touch the leaves?
Yes. So what do I do, please?
All right. It sounds like they're what I would call vinegar flies, little gnats that live in the potting mix. And as the potting mix breaks down, they come out of the soil and fly around. Presumably they procreate and you get another cycle. What to do? I would be using an oil spray, one of the horticultural oil sprays.
Just one of them.
Eco oil or pest oil. And I think if you sprayed the leaves, that'll make the leaves pretty uncomfortable. And don't be afraid just to water a small, just only in the top probably 2 or 3 centimetres of around the crown of the plant. If you just water that in there, that should give you control.
So there's a bit of the sticky stuff on the leaves. Is that consistent with vinegar?
Well, those little vinegar flies don't usually suck anything materials. It could actually just be the plant itself. Indoor plants in particular, they can exude a sweet material, and it's their way of attracting ants, would you believe? And they attract the ants to protect them from the caterpillars and things like that. It's an interesting story. But, listen, if you are concerned, rather than using an oil spray, you might care to use a spray called Maverick. Have you got an oil spray?
I've got an oil spray.
Okay, we'll use that. Maverick is a synthetic pyrethroid. It's just a broad insecticide. It'll knock off everything, but you're not too worried about bees and things like that inside.
So
I think the oil spray, if you just put that on there, that should give you the control that you're looking for.
Yes, I've got that left over from my citrus fruit, citrus trees.
Righto. Well, hopefully that fixes the problem.
Okay, terrific.
Fabulous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Iris, and thank you very much for your patience. Margaret is in Hope Valley with apple cucumber, one of my favourite summer veggies. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Yes, I've got apple cucumbers with dozens of flowers, have had flowers for weeks, but nothing setting. I've been shading them with an old sheet, and they're only in sun small part of the day.
Yes.
But I'm still not getting any fruit.
You can tell the difference between a male and a female flower?
Yeah.
Okay. You're getting plenty of both male and female flowers on your plants?
Well, I think so.
Okay. Well, that's you're halfway there when you get the balance there, where you've got both male and female. Then you need to take a look at why they're not setting, and I would suspect it's to do with our weather.
Yes.
When we get temperatures above 32 degrees, you'll find that even though the plant is flowering, the pollen dries out very, very quickly.
Yes.
And the bees don't get time to do the pollination before the pollen dries out.
I have been trying with a small brush to pollinate, but nothing's happened.
Yes. Okay. Well, temperatures have a major role in control of the plant growth and the hormones within the plant. And once it gets a plant, the flower itself gets above a certain amount of degrees, you'll find that the hormones change, and even though it might be pollinated, it won't set simply because of what's going on in terms of temperatures. All we can do is just keep the plant healthy and keep the flowers going, so that as we move back into more acceptable weather, some of those flowers will set and you'll end up with lots of nice apple cucumbers.
Well, I hope so, because the plant actually looks quite healthy.
Yeah, well, just keep it ticking over. Yes. Don't overstimulate it. You may, if it's growing quickly, take the tips out of the longest, strongest stems.
Yes.
And that makes it send out more branches. And
it an occasional a dose of sea salt.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Stay away from high nitrogen fertilisers. Don't do that at the moment. And I think you'll find that once we move into particularly the back end of February and March, it's surprising how quickly the cucumbers and zucchinis and things like that, something goes on inside the plants, and they really do start to set lots of the flowers, set fruits.
That's a long time to wait.
Well, you should get some in the meantime, yeah, and that's why.
All right, thank you.
Good, Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret. Eve is at Marino with a standard rose question. Welcome, Eve.
Hello. Yeah, hi.
What's the problem there, Eve?
Oh, I've got two standard roses in a big pottage, which I've had for about 5 years. One of them, this year, before the heat, put out two long shoots. Be quiet, that's the dog. Put out two long shoots, about 2 feet long.
Yes.
And so I cut them back to the normal size. And this is before the heat. Now we've got another two. And this one's even longer, about more than 2 feet long. Shall I just cut them back?
Well, we need to know where those shoots are coming from.
If they're coming from the proper part of the tree above the main stem.
On the main stem. Okay.
Yes.
Then that's okay, because if they were coming from below, that'd be a water shoot, and you'd need, coming from the rootstock, you'd need to remove that. Yes. So
these standard roses, so they're coming from up the top there.
So how long did you say those?
About 2 feet long.
Oh, that's very, very long, isn't it? Yeah.
I cut the last lot back to the normal length.
What I'd do,
while
we've got very, very hot weather, all I'd be doing is coming back on the long stems, chop those back by about 20%. All you're doing is taking the tips out, and the tips that are causing, loaded with hormones for growth. If you remove the tips, you remove the growth hormones, and that will slow it down. It will also set up the buds for sprouting, and you'll have more side growth later on. As we move towards the end of February, I'd suggest that you can cut those long stems back probably by about 50%. And that should encourage lots of side branches. And in winter, you can work out just which ones you want to keep and which ones you want to sort of let go.
I thought it might be the dying froze, like it was going to crack.
I don't think so. It's probably there's some good tucker there that is looking after it. Yeah. Have you got one of those smart dogs that sort of makes a noise every time you go on the phone?
Oh, no. We've driven to the beach only 200 metres away for him to get to the beach and have a run before 10 o'clock, I made him wait, so now we're going to get there.
Oh, goodness, they know how to talk to you, though.
I know.
Saying, let me out of the car, Mum. I've got to get on the beach.
I know.
Thanks, Eve. We'll let you go and walk that poor doggy. Kathy at McGill has something eating her ape. Oh, no, Kathy's disappeared. Sorry about that. We'll go to Tony at Pasadena, who has a cucumber issue. Hi, Tony.
Yes, good morning.
So, tell us about your problem, Tony.
Well, I've had this problem for years, and I'm sure others have as well. First of all, Happy New Year to you, John, and Deb, and to all the ABC listeners. I've been listening to your program for many years, but I still have dozens of questions I'd like to ask. But
who's going to answer my questions, though?
Yeah, right. This one concerns, look, partially, when you and Brett spoke, you'd answer the question using potassium soap for the mites, but you need to spray underneath the leaves, is that right?
Yes, you've got to get a pretty thorough spray there. If you've got lots of queues and a big mite problem, suggest that you invest in that product we were talking before, Maverick.
Maverick,
yeah. I would normally suggest you'd use a wettable sulphur, but I wouldn't be suggesting you use wettable sulphur on cucumbers. It'll burn the leaves. So either you can use your potassium spray, and if you get a little sprayer and get a nice fine mist, you'll find that you can get underneath them. But
in the stores I've looked for Rogorn. I couldn't find it because
that's good.
Being a systemic.
Rogor is what I'd call one of the old sledgehammers that have been removed from the market many, many years ago. It's extremely toxic. It's carcinogenic. It's a chemical that shouldn't be used. And there are still a lot of gardeners that have got a bottle of Rogor in their cupboards. and I would suggest you you might take a little trip out to Dry Creek where they collect old chemicals and things like that.
All right, look, what would replace it? Is there another systemic spray that you could use?
Well, there was imidacloprid, but imidacloprid, that's Confidor, is about to be withdrawn from the market.
As well.
It's not being banned. I think you'll find that because the sales of Confidor have dropped dramatically, and because the major store that sells chemicals, which is about 50% of the market, because they have withdrawn it, the manufacturers, Bayer, the manufacturers of Confidor, saying we can no longer justify supplying this chemical to home gardeners.
Right.
And it's a story I was going to talk about in more detail later on. The question is, there are lots of there are substitutes for sap-sucking insects, but there are certain insects which are almost impossible to control with soft options. Your earwigs and of the beetles and things like that. You asked what kind of I'm not aware of a systemic. Underline systemic insecticide that will control mites. Much better to use sulfur when the weather is cool. Wettable sulfur. The value of wettable sulfur, it's not systemic, but it vaporizes. So when you spray it on a warm day, the vapor from the chemical goes into the air, and that also disturbs the mites and stops them from multiplying.
All right, well, thank you very much. And by the way, gardening is the most popular activity in Australia, probably in the whole world. So thank you very much, and a Happy New Year.
Right, thanks for your information there, Tony.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tony. Happy New Year to you also.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Colin joins us now from Port Augusta. Good morning.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, John. John, a simple question. Can I use worm juice diluted as a foliar spray?
You can use it. It's not going to do much good, I don't think. The materials that what they call a foliar fertiliser have been manufactured so that they can actually be absorbed by the leaves. Mm-hmm. You'll find a lot of the material in the worm juice, if it's solid, it stays on the outside and doesn't get absorbed. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some chemicals that will be in the worm juice which will actually be absorbed through the leaves. I suspect that you will find that you would be where you mightn't get very much benefit by putting it on the foliage, and you've got to be careful because if it's got salt in it, you might cause damage. On the other hand, if you put it into the root system, the roots are very, very different, and they can absorb the various compounds and materials in worm juice, and they can put it to very, very good advantage. So use it on the roots, not the leaves. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to you both.
Okay.
Thank you. Straight back at you, Colin. Lance is in Morphett Vale with an azalea question. Good morning.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, John. I have a big problem. I had a beautiful, beautiful crop of flowers on my azaleas last season. However, I have leaf blight again, and I have put in Confidor pills. I have sprayed it with Confidor, which I got at one of the department stores. And I'm just hearing John saying it's no longer available.
Yeah, I reckon there's going to be a run on Confidor. The stores are allowed to sell what they've got. I mean, there's nothing, nobody's damning it and sort of saying it should be banned. They're just saying it's not going to be available to home gardeners.
Which is going to be a real problem for azaleas.
Well, for a lot of problems, yeah, that's right. But that's a story for another day. So you've got mites and you want to know what to control.
Yeah, absolutely. One is pretty bad and the others are slowly copying it, basically.
Have you tried wettable sulfur?
No.
then I would suggest that when we've got a run of nice cooler weather, that you certainly give them a good application of a wettable sulphur. That should give them control probably for a couple of weeks. And keep an eye on it, because they can recolonise. You won't knock the whole lot off in one application. No. Be prepared to put on a second application and follow that up.
Would Maverick be a problem with them?
Maverick is very, very good on mites. Extremely good.
Okay.
The thing with Maverick, it's what I call broad spectrum. Whatever it touches, it kills, both goodies and baddies. So you make that decision, but there are times when you think that there are not too many hoverflies and bees around and you've got a particular problem, you can control
the mites.
Yeah, okay. Whereas sulphur has some effect on the good guys, the predators, but it's much softer than certainly Maverick.
Yeah, well, we definitely don't want to go killing out the good ones, do we?
No. The nice thing with Maverick is it's reasonably tolerant on bees.
Well, that's excellent, because we've got a lot of trees with fruit and everything on them, and we don't want to kill the
bees. And it's the bees that people are concerned about. And again, it's a little irritant of mine. People are blaming the chemicals for the lack of bees, whereas it's the environment they're in, the lack of flowering plants, and in particular the hot weather, particularly in spring, that causes problems.
Well, it's off to the mites and man I go, eh?
Yeah, okay. Well, it's a matter of priorities. And if people got as concerned about the environment as they did about some of the chemicals, I think we'd have a better place to live.
Absolutely. Chemicals you've just got to be so careful of. Mm. And thank you very, very much, guys. And thank you for a wonderful show and a happy new year to you all.
Thank you, Lance. Same to you.
Bye.
Susan at Seacliff on bees sent a text through earlier saying the lack of rain since the beginning of the year has led to a lack of nectar, thus now hungry bees and few swarms. And she's put lots of water out for bees in the hot weather.
Yes, yes. Spence Nenny had a wonderful interview on with an Adelaide bee person who collects the bees when they swarm and get into people's houses.
Was it Bill the bee man?
That's right.
Yeah. Great.
Very interesting. And certainly the point he was making is that it's the environment that the bees live in. And if you take a look at our gardens today, all the topiary and all the leaves with the lack of flowers, you know, compare that with, say, 20 or 30 years ago, where the place was full of, cottage garden flowers and daisies and all those kind of things which attracted the bees. So, you know, that's just one part of the story, but it's the weather, the temperatures in particular, that have a major influence on whether we have a lot of bees or not too many bees in a particular season.
But you're right, John, if you want bees in your garden, plant flowering plants, particularly,
yes.
I think, yellows that they particularly like.
Yes, listen to Sophie Thompson on a Sunday. She'll certainly encourage you to have flowering plants for bees.
I think our last talkback call for 2018 is Coralie from Aldinga. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did I say 2017? I hope
not.
Oh, good, good. Thanks, Coralie.
Yes, fire away there, Coralie.
I have a pumpkin plant, and it's actually overwintered, and now it's growing again, and it's really big. It's growing successful pumpkins, and someone told me that you can cut off, like, the end of runners to promote pumpkin growth,
yes,
rather
absolutely.
Than just keep going green.
Yes.
And I'm not sure about that.
Yes, no, I've mentioned that about three times this morning, I think.
I was in my garden.
For different problems. But yes, certainly, if you've got lots of pumpkins and you want the energy to go into the pumpkins and not to create new or more pumpkins, certainly take the tips of all the runners. You'll find that at the end of runners, there's a nice little soft tip there. Just cut that back by 10 or 15 centimetres, and you'll find that will encourage the energy that's coming out of the root system to end up in the pumpkins rather than producing more flowers.
Yeah, okay. And do pumpkins normally overwinter?
The plants don't, no. No, they normally...
Well, this did.
Well, you must have a very good environment there. The thing in autumn, late autumn, as we get cooler temperatures, powdery mildew, a fungus disease, becomes established on the leaves and knocks off the leaves. And once you've got rid of the leaves, or knocked off the leaves, the root system also seems to disappear. But if you've got the right kind of just enough warmth and good drainage and a little bit of air moving over the plant, you've got a good chance that they might survive.
Okay. Well, Thank you very much.
A 5% chance.
Well, I was in the 5%.
Well done. Well done.
Okay. Thank you very much and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Coralie. Happy New Year to you. We've got a couple of minutes before we hit the 10 o'clock news. After 10 o'clock, you'll be joined by Lisa Leong on the radio. But, John, taking a look back at 2018, what are the sort of headlines you'd pull out of the year?
Well, I think it's a matter of dealing with the hot weather. And it's how we deal with the hot weather. The answer, of course, is water. But it's how you use the water that's tremendously important. And I suppose it's sprinklers. If you're using a sprinkler, just bear in mind that you've got to leave a sprinkler on the ground for a long time before you get any benefit from it. Otherwise, you'll lose a lot of the moisture through evaporation. If you've got a micro-irrigation system, just bear in mind that your roots are concentrated where the drippers are. And so if during hot weather you'll find that the plants use the water in their root zone very, very quickly. And the answer is not to leave your drippers on longer because the water goes underneath the root system and you can't use it. It's to top up and use your drippers more often. If you've got problems with in your containers, it's very, very important, I think, that you water the night before, allow the plants to actually gather their moisture and then keep them cool. And don't be afraid of misting. You'll find on a hot day, particularly when the plants are in the shade, but even in the hot day, if the plants are wilting, just misting drops the temperature around the leaves, allows the leaves to keep on functioning, to keep on transpiring, to keep themselves cool. I think, as Brett said, gardeners have learning very, very quickly that we're getting more hot weather more often, but we're also learning how to deal with that hot weather and the value of organic matter in the soil and as well as on the soil as mulch, and the value of shade will give you the protection and allow you to continue gardening so that as we move into 2019, you end up as good gardeners. Can I say, until next year, compliments of the season to you all and hope to be talking to you again early in the new year.